Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, we're discussing an area of particular importance this year, not just due to the issues that many companies are facing at the moment due to the ongoing pandemic, but an area that has also seen some legislative change this year. Today, we're discussing the topics of sick pay and sick leave. So to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by Liam Barton, Senior HR Consultant here at Insight HR. We haven't had you on since last year, Liam, so welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, Owen, and Happy New Year to you and all our listeners.
Same to you. And of course, we're also joined by our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
Good. I'm great, thanks. How are you all?
All good. Brilliant. So we'll jump right in. So I suppose, Liam, to kind of set the scene, set some context. What are the current obligations really for employers when it comes to sick pay and sick leave, respectively?
Yeah, I mean, it's an area that's probably been highlighted in the last 12 to 18 months more than ever before, Owen, with the COVID pandemic. Typically, in Ireland, we're an outlier currently in Europe in terms of there's no automatic entitlement to sick pay. That's going to change in early 2022. There's a sick leave bill before the Dáil being scrutinized at the moment. Overall, there was a study done in 2019, and about 44% of employers, when surveyed, pay sick pay or have some sort of sick pay arrangement. So typically, unless you're covered by a sectoral employment order in the contract cleaning or security industry, there's no automatic right to sick pay in the Republic of Ireland. Now, that will change in 2022 because the sick leave bill is currently before the Dáil, and it's expected to be enacted in quarter one. It was expected to be enacted actually in quarter four, but it's been delayed and it's being scrutinized. So when we interface with clients, Owen, typically we will ask, do you have a sick pay arrangement in place? And in very many cases, there is often a level of confusion or a level of ambiguity regarding, well, we have a discretionary sick pay scheme. So our advice typically in terms of obligations and what people should do is you should have a consistent policy. It should be clear to all your employees and you should consistently implement it. In terms of the obligations, while there isn't an obligation currently, it is something that employers and business owners and HR practitioners will have to factor into their budgets and equations in 2022. So it is something they will have to look at in a very, I think, comprehensive manner from a budgeting and from a practical point of view. In relation to obligations on sick leave, there is a general obligation on the employer to treat any employee who was out sick fairly and reasonably, and again, objectively. So there's quite stringent equality legislation which protects the employee with regard to any legislation which may be in place in terms of, for instance, if a female employee is on maternity leave and suffers postnatal depression arising from the maternity leave, certainly there would be very, very stringent protections in place in relation to that particular employee's employment. So typically our advice in relation to an employee on sick leave is to treat them fairly, to treat them objectively. Typically, there after 3 days, there is a requirement in most cases for medical certification. And typically, there is a right to continue employment unless the employer terminates on the grounds of ill capacity. Now, while the employer is entitled, following stringent protocols and protections, to terminate on the grounds of ill capacity, there's quite a number of hurdles to be passed. And so very often, Mary and myself would get, you know, a call from an employer, I've got an employee who's out on long-term sick leave. They've been out for a year. Can I just send them their P45 as would have been the case previously? And you can't actually. So you do need to go through a quite a stringent process in relation to, you know, getting their up-to-date details in relation to their sick leave, finding out if it would be possible for them to return at a future date, if it is possible for them to return on a phased return to work basis, and what protections or supports you can provide, if any, to allow them to return to work. And typically under the Workplace Relations Act, employees on long-term certified sick leave accrue their annual leave as normal. So that's something that employers have to be careful of as well, that you may have someone out for, you know, 6 to 9 months to 12 months, they actually accrue their annual leave as normal due to a change in legislation over a number. So I certainly would encourage employers to be cautious and to be supportive of employees who are out on either intermittent or long-term sick leave, because it's not an easy issue to deal with.
Building on what Liam is kind of saying there, Mary, about the kind of issues that employers face. So what kind of, I suppose, issues are employers facing? What do we see coming to us in relation to things like sick pay and sick leave?
I mean, we would have a HR support line, and we get everyday queries around people's entitlements and what they are or aren't entitled to. Typically, most organisations have a sick leave policy in place, and whether or not they have a sick leave scheme in place or not, some of the most common issues arise when it comes to long-term absence. And when it gets to long-term absence, then the tone of that conversation sometimes changes. And, you know, people start to think about, well, you know, we have a replacement in place who's very effective, and we no longer want this person who's absent to return to work. And, you know, help us go about doing that. And that would be probably one of the most common queries that we would get. And as Liam says, there's many hurdles when it comes to that. So, you know, first off, from an employer perspective and from a human resource management perspective, I think you've got to think about the Employment Equality Acts and its definition of disability. And I'm not going to go into the definition here, but I would urge any, you know, our listeners to check out the Employment Equality Acts so that they're clear about that definition. And the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission has a nice summary there that is well worth checking out. But an employer has a duty to make reasonable accommodation for somebody with a long-term disability. And I guess when you're thinking about that, that can be anything from flexible working hours or remote working or workplace adaptations. And we've seen some big cases over the last few years, particularly when it comes to Nanonagle School versus Daly, where the Irish Supreme Court considered in detail what was required by the duty to make reasonable accommodation. And that has changed the landscape somewhat for employers when it comes to looking at reasonable accommodation in the workplace. And there was a recent case involving Peter Mark where a hairstylist had injured her wrist in a car accident and ultimately resigned her position, although initially the wrist injury was thought to be temporary. It turned out to have to be a more serious condition than initially thought. And while her own salon had recommended that she could come in and cover reception one day per week, she had turned that down on the basis that that would affect her ability to get benefits. And instead, when a relief receptionist opportunity came up in Peter Mark, the group, she applied for it, but didn't actually get the role because she didn't have cash handling experience, which was a 4-week course. And therefore, when she did get to the WRC, they basically said that, you know, this lady had an exemplary work record. She had a disability in terms of her wrist, whether or not that was permanent or temporary, that still hadn't been established, and that the employer hadn't actually contested that. And that they had made no attempt to investigate her injury, and that it really wasn't reasonable, that because she didn't have cash handling experience, that they didn't try to reasonably accommodate her. And they awarded that particular lady 6,000 euro. And so when it comes to reasonable accommodation, it's a tricky area, and so is a dismissal on the grounds of ill capacity, or someone has an injury that changes their ability to carry out the role in the way in which they have done in the past. And this is an area where we find irrespective of size of the organization, this is something that HR practitioners get wrong, and often get wrong. And so it's probably worth a bit of discussion here between Liam and I around how you can avoid that particular mistake.
Yeah, because I think just building on that, Mary, I think a lot of people would consider kind of sick pay, sick leave, those kind of things are pretty kind of day-to-day thing, fairly straightforward. But by the sounds of it there are cases hitting the labor court, the WRC, that kind of thing. So I suppose, yeah, kind of building on what you're saying there, is there, I suppose, why does it happen? What steps are HR teams, companies not taking that are resulting in it hitting the courts?
Well, if you see right off with Peter Mark there, and Peter Mark is a huge organization employing, you know, I'm not quite sure, but, you know, many people across the country in many salons. But, you know, they didn't look for an independent medical in relation to the wrist injury. So that was one thing that they didn't do, to establish, you know, the nature of the injury, how it was likely to affect the particular individual, how long might she require off work, what kind of accommodations could the company make to facilitate her in her role, and what alternatives could they consider? And that whole process just didn't happen. In that particular organization. So they learned the hard way by getting slapped with an award. And obviously it takes time and money and effort and worry and concern and all of those things anytime there's a claim made against the company. And HR people feel that keenly. I know certainly anytime when I worked in-house in HR roles and a legal letter crossed my desk, or a complaint from the WRC crossed my desk, that would cause a sleepless night for me and a concern about the process that, you know, I had guided someone on back in the day. So we do understand that these are stressful situations for HR people and employers alike.
Just to come in on that point, Mary, I think, you know, there's two things I would say, I suppose, and I think you've highlighted it very well yourself. The broad nature of the definition of disability, I think, is something that perennially takes HR professionals and those within industry by surprise. And I would state, what a broad definition that it is, and also the way third party forums would treat the issues which come before them. So it is a very, very broad, all-encompassing definition. And typically, you know, you would probably be minded to almost accept almost any matter of sick leave almost as a disability within the remit of the definition. So I do think you have to be very, very careful and cautious in terms of how you approach that. And I think often within industry, HR practitioners are under pressure, possibly from the business or the line managers, to say, look, this person has been out for, 12 to 14 months. Why are we continuing to hold their role open to allow them to return to work when, we can't see any possibility of this person coming back to the packaging line or whatever the role is? And I think you mentioned, Mary, time. And I think one of the key messages I would put across is, you need to take time. You need to consider all the options. You need to get the best medical evidence. You need to write out to the employee and say, look, at this stage, you've been out for X period of time. We've exhausted, we believe, all the potential opportunities in terms of redeployment, retraining. We're at a situation potentially in the next 3 to 6 months where we could look at possibly terminating your role. We don't want to do that, and we won't do that until we engage with you and give you all the medical evidence and afford you and your medical advisor an opportunity to input into that. I think there's a series of steps that, if you have to do the doomsday scenario of terminating on the grounds of ill capacity, that you need to take. And I think sometimes possibly HR practitioners or HR professionals under pressure from the business jump a step or skip a step. And I think it's very, very important that we take a sort of creative approach and, look at our business and sort of say, well, look, maybe this person can't work on the packaging line anymore, but are there other opportunities within the business? This person has been with us for 10 to 12 years. Are there other roles that this person can do quite successfully within our business, which are different? Or is there a part of the role the person can do 2 days a week, which they won't be able to return 5 days a week? So I think sometimes we need to look at the world differently, and we need to sort of see, is there an opportunity for redeployment? Is there an opportunity to create a different role, which might be a hybrid of the role that this person was doing? So I think sometimes if there was more questioning or more creativity or more brainstorming around the role, and okay, this is what our business currently looks like, what roles could be there in the next 6 to 12 months? So it's not necessarily about creating a role specifically because someone has a disability. I think it's looking at the world differently in terms of what added value can this person bring to the business? Because very often people who've worked within the business have a lot of experience, a lot of tacit knowledge, which can be used in different departments. So I think very, very much I would urge caution. I would urge looking at the legislation. I would urge looking at the case law, which Mary has alluded to, because there are many, many cases where employers have been caught out. And I would certainly encourage a collaborative, creative approach in terms of what are the different types of role and how will our business change? We've had COVID, we've had the transfer from, broadly speaking, an in-house or in head office type roles to hybrid roles. So how can we marry that into this area and consider how someone can perform in the future would be what I'd say.
And also, I think it's important to be aware that just because you have, for instance, a very significant disability, that you feel somebody can no longer carry out their role, that the Nanonagle School versus Daily case is well worth checking out, because in those particular circumstances, the individual concerned had experienced significant injuries in a car crash, and the school believed she was no longer capable of carrying out her role.
So coming back to, I suppose, what's going on this year, Liam. So obviously there's some changes coming down the line with sick pay. So what exactly is coming down the line in relation to sick pay and that those new legislative changes?
Yeah, the sick leave bill 2021 is before the Dáil at the minute. It was expected that would be enacted last year, but they're still scrutinising the bill. What is proposed is that it would bring the Republic of Ireland into line with our European neighbours, in that it would introduce for the first time a statutory right to sick pay across the country. There were proposals when it was initially envisaged that there would be a 6 month cutoff point, i.e. your entitlement would only begin after 6 months service. That's been brought back to 13 weeks in terms of the current legislation. And it is envisaged that there would be an entitlement of 3 days sick pay initially in 2022, going up incrementally to 10 days sick pay entitlement in 2025. So it's before the Dáil at the minute. I suppose in terms of looking at it, it's quite a minimal entitlement in terms of 3 days initially. What the legislation, interestingly, also says is that it currently it can't be brought back to less than 3 days, but it can be increased over time by the minister in situ. It does apply to certified sick leave. So that's interesting in terms of, obviously, Owen, there is a cost to providing a certificate and there's a cost to going to your general practitioner. So it's envisaged in the legislation that it would apply to certified sick leave only. So I think that's interesting that, you know, you may have a situation where from a cost point of view, some people may find it prohibitive going to a general practitioner or a medical advisor, etc. So that's something that I suppose at this stage, we're waiting for the legislation to be enacted. Typically, there's a lead in time in terms of, obviously, organizations are going to, in quarter one in any case, have to look at their policies and procedures in terms of their employment contracts, their staff handbooks, their HR department's advice to the individual departments within the business. So I think at this stage, probably our best advice to organizations would be to look at the legislation that's coming before the Dáil, to take professional advice, to look at your existing policies and procedures, and to look at what type of sick pay arrangements you wish to have in place. Because one of the things in terms of the Act provides that where the employer has a larger sick pay or a better sick pay arrangement, it doesn't necessarily have to change in line with the legislation, i.e. if an employer currently pays a month's sick pay and a month's half pay thereafter, they don't have to bring that back to 3 days in 2022. So where the existing arrangements are better than the legislation, it would be envisaged that organizations would stick with their original arrangements. But I think for HR departments and for people within industry, this is something that is going to be introduced unquestionably in 2022. They're going to have to look at their existing policies and procedures. And also, I think holistically, in terms of the challenges that we faced in industry, typically with people turning up for work, displaying symptoms and being ill at work, you know, I think it's something that organizations have to take a very benign view of. It is better for people not to present at work when they are sick or unwell. And I think that's something that businesses have to be careful about and manage in 2022 and going forward.
So I suppose bringing it back to the reason why we do what we do and giving advice to employers and HR teams, so I'll come to both of you for this question, but yourself first, Mary. So what can employers really do then, I suppose, to ensure that they abide by kind of good practice when it comes to sick leave and sick pay? And what are kind of some tips we can share with them to say, look, here's what you can do to make sure you're ahead of the game or at least in line with legislation and good practice?
So I agree totally with Liam in terms of reviewing the sick leave policy and the sick pay arrangements that are already in place. You know, once you introduce a statutory minimum in terms of anything, whether it's annual leave, sick pay or anything else, you know, the organisations that are offering enhanced benefits tend to have to move upwards and offer more and better. And you'll probably see a change in 2022 up to 2025 where organizations will compete around the health benefits that they are offering their employees. So I think you can expect to see that. I think always when it comes to the application of your policy and procedures, you know, large organizations tend to do this better, but not always. You know, a consistent application of your policy and procedure when it comes to long-term absence in particular is important. You know, where we see differentiation is where an organization values one employee more than another, and then the discretionary element of oh dear, valued employee A has had a stroke, and therefore we must support that individual, versus an underperformer who has some other kind of a disability or health issue, particularly when it comes to mental health. So, you know, I think that consistency is so important in terms of, you know, how HR treat illness, injury, disability within the workplace. And like Liam says, what's the leadership view and how can HR influence that when it comes to disability? There's a lot of talk about diversity and inclusion, and disability certainly forms a huge part of any diversity and inclusion strategy. So I think it's really about walking the talk, if that makes sense.
Same question yourself, I suppose. Do you have anything else to add for kind of advice, guidance for employers and HR teams?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo what Mary has said in terms of, I think, an empathetic approach. I think a supportive approach. I think, you know, particularly as Mary said, around, you know, the area of mental health and employee well-being, you know, we should be doing what we say on the brochure. So in other words, if our selling point to prospective new employees is, you know, a benign, supportive culture where we're with you in good times and in bad, then I think the proof of the pudding, for want of a better phrase, is, you know, when somebody is suffering challenges at home or they're having a crisis, you know, how I suppose financially and in other terms is the organization prepared to support that person? And, you know, I would agree with Mary. I think a consistency of approach, some organizations have real challenges around that. And it is exactly as Mary has alluded to, that, you know, the high performer or the high achiever who suddenly has an issue versus, you know, maybe the not so great performer. And is there a differentiation in terms of both, you know, sick pay and arrangements around sick leave or return to work, which are different? And, you know, I'd be lying on if I said I'd come across organizations who didn't have real different ways of dealing with those challenges. And I think, what sort of signals in terms of the war for talent are they sending out to prospective new employees? Because the whole area of, you know, corporate social responsibility and the employee voice, you know, people will make decisions very, very quickly if they hear that, or if there's a view that, you know, different people are treated differently within the organization in this arena. And I think I would encourage organizations to look at this in a benign way, in a supportive way. You know, if employee well-being is really at the heart of what the organization is about, then I think this is an area where they can give practical support to that vision.
And don't forget, there are times when, you know, a very unwell employee is desperately trying to hang on to a role and they're simply not able to perform that role or not really well enough to be at work. And we have come across that scenario where, you know, somebody who's very seriously ill is still attempting to come to work. And really, you know, anyone can tell when they're there that they're not well enough to be in the office or in the environment or in the workplace. And so employers have some really big challenges when it comes to that whole area. It's highly, highly emotive. And if you are unwell, if you're having a crisis, if you've really injured yourself, the last thing a human being needs is a really aggressive approach from their own employer where they have worked for how long. So it's I would always urge people to think human first, and be human centric in all of their approaches to these matters, because, you know, this is somebody's life ultimately. And it's important that you take a kind, benign, sympathetic approach in anything that you're going to do.
Yeah, and it's certainly a huge topic, as we said. It touches on everything from discrimination to diversity and inclusion to things like the war for talent, even as you mentioned, Mary, even it becoming an employee benefit in the near future. And I suppose if it's a topic that even if it goes wrong, you could end up in front of the WRC as well. So it's definitely an important one for HR people and I suppose employers to think about. So a huge thank you to both of you for a very kind of insightful, practical discussion there. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for some useful resources related to today's topic, of which there will be many after that discussion. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insidehr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Liam.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Inside HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insidehr.ie/podcast. That's www.insidehr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Inside HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.